This episode of The Tome is brought to you by your leading source of PDF books, RPGNow.com. The best site on the net for dice, GMDice.com. And listeners like you. Thanks for using The Tome's Amazon store. It gets you the Amazon discounts while helping make this show possible.
This is Luke Johnson, the Hyper Rider who's worked with Wizards of the Coast, White Wolf, Goodman Games, and you're listening to The Tome! Woo!
My name is Harley Stroh, and I'm the line editor for the Goodman Games Dungeon Crawl Classics, and you are about to enter the dungeon of the Vorpal Network. Snicketer snack. Roll for initiative.
Welcome to The Tome, episode 100! The Tome is a D&D news, reviews, and interviews show, and I'm your Tome host, Jeff Greiner. In this episode, we're celebrating the game that made the show possible. The only announcement I'm going to make in this episode is that the Vorpal Network site, at vorpalnetwork.com, is undergoing a fairly major revamp, which includes the Tome's forums. We're going to use some recent hacking troubles as an opportunity to make the site better than ever. So keep checking in, and be ready for Vorpal Network 2.0, coming soon, and be patient when it comes out. We're going to be working hard to make it better than ever. Now, before we get into the D&D celebration, let's celebrate our first sponsor of the episode, RPGNow.com. My pick for this episode is the entire Dungeons & Dragons page of RPG Now. They have products in PDF from every edition of the game. Want to see what the original D&D was like? Those PDFs are $6 a piece. A lot better than you're going to get at eBay. Check out 2nd Edition AD&D, the edition that got me into the game. Plus, all the 3rd Edition stuff that you came to love, and the 4th Edition stuff that you wish you had on your shelf, are all there at a discounted price, in a format that won't ever smudge.
Get the newest releases at RPG Now. Only at RPG Now can you get the absolute latest and best releases from fantastic publishers like Fat Dragon Games, Green Ronin Publishing, and Wizards of the Coast. There are new products every single day. Come to RPGNow.com and get them the instant they're available.
Well, it's my show, and it's my 100th episode, not including episodes of The Tome Show Presents. And I have done some rough estimation that I have put in more than 400 hours for the show, not including website work, forum discussion, which is really a perk, not a task, and time reading products, emailing, or hunting down sponsors. So, I'm going to go first, and if you don't like it, tough. So here's my D&D story. I started playing D&D when I was 8 years old. That's over 20 years now. We were playing 2nd edition AD&D, and my first character was a half-elf ranger named Sharonic Brightblade, who started the game with a Pegasus and a Brownie as companions. And the first monster I killed was a black dragon. But we were 8, so, you know, we didn't know any better. After getting my first batch of experience, I came skidding into the living room of my friend's house on my knees with a phrase that would, much to my chagrin, become the words that I would forever be remembered in that house. "Derek, give me 3,000 experience points." You see, at age 8, I had a pretty hefty speech impediment. Wouldn't have thunk from a guy who produced 100 episodes of a podcast, huh? And that was the group that started my love affair with D&D. So for introducing me to the game, and for trading me his entire chest of 2nd edition AD&D books in exchange for my box of Magic the Gathering cards, books which I still own, by the way, thank you, Derek. Then I started playing with a group of my middle school and high school friends. Josh and I switched off and on as DMs. He ran us through a fun alternative story of Dragonlance where the bad guys won, but of course, that's just because the rest of the party was playing the bad guys. My character was the only one who wouldn't support Taucasus in her attempt to take over the world, so I got to run a solo game for the next month. And then still eventually lose, because ultimately it was 3 PCs versus 1. Forget about good versus evil. I also remember putting together a team of villains to thwart the players in an adventure I created by basically creating the most powerful group I could against the middle-level powered PCs. I recall that my goal was to stop the constantly used tactic of this group, which it was, find the bad guys and hit them with swords until they die. I wanted them to have to be sneaky, to come up with creative solutions and still win. Turns out that that's not the game they wanted to play, and I apparently didn't communicate my desires very well. So, they found the bad guys and hit them with swords, only this time the bad guys won. So, thank you, Josh, Mark, and Brandon, for years of hack and slashing. My next group allowed me to spread the love of the game to younger high school students that I knew. This is where I learned a lot of my DMing skills, and things went well for a long time, except for when Jeremy came into the group with a character loaded with unimaginable items that he was willing to sell to the rest of the party and grossly unbalancing the game. For giving me the chance to become the DM I am today, thank you, Jeff, Donnie, and Trevor. In college, it took me some time to find a new group, but when I did, I was introduced to a whole new complexity of storytelling. Josh, Mona, and Keith, thank you for showing me how a game can layer in this fantastic mix of personal character drama and development with truly epic stories that are played out on a grand scale. This was also my first exposure to Al-Qadim, and I have to say, Arabian Adventures are much, much cooler than I thought they would be. I kept up with the third edition conversion that I'd made in college through play-by-email games, with a group that is called the Woodshed Gaming Collective. Believe me, you do not want to be taken out back to the woodshed, especially by Pat. I learned more about the rules, game design, balance, and character development from those games than anything else I've ever done. Most of my 3E life was with the Woodshed, and they were fantastic times. For years, this was the only D&D I played. And I want to particularly thank Pat, Brian, Leslie, Malcolm, and Nate. You guys have been the rocks that the Shed has sat on for years, and those games we started when I was in college are still going strong, thanks to you. Then I renewed my love of the tabletop version of the game while I was living in Omaha. Casey, Josh, Amber, and the others, you reinstilled in me an enthusiasm and passion for the game that I think I had been missing for a while. Lastly, there is my current group, Donnie, Dirk, Glenn, McCoy, Greg, Rob, and Ethan. You welcomed me into my new home in Raleigh, North Carolina, with a warm smile and some great games. This group has been my only 4th edition group, but we all jumped in just a few weeks after the first books were released. We've had a great adventure in the heroic tier called Monsters of Thay that I've been running. But more than that, I have a great time hanging out with my new friends in my new home. I look forward to throwing more near-death fights at you in the Paragon tier, and McCoy, I promise to find new and interesting ways to kill you. You see, McCoy has a prolific way of dying in the Monsters of Thay game, but I can hardly be blamed for killing him when he chased the one remaining kobold further into the unexplored territory by himself, thus beginning the next encounter before the party could even take a short rest, and this was the encounter against the party's first dragon, a blue. I like blue dragons. Well, that's my D&D story. D&D has given me hours of entertainment, most of my best friends, this hobby we call podcasting and gaming, social, logical, and leadership skills that have served me well in life, and I can't thank the game more for it. Gary Gygax, Dave Arneson, TSR, Wizards of the Coast, and anybody who's ever worked on the game, thank you for making my life more fulfilled. I've been asking all over the internet for people to contribute stories, explaining what D&D means to them. And I had some industry insiders interested, but the timing never quite worked out. However, you do get to hear some inspiring stories from podcasters, bloggers, contributors of the Tome Show, members of the Vorpal Network, and listeners like you, all answering the question, what does D&D mean to me? But before that, our second sponsor of the episode, GMDice.com. Because seriously, what's a game of D&D if you don't have dice? Well, GM Dice has them all for you. Richard Hatch from Battlestar Galactica says so. That's the real Richard Hatch.
Hello, this is Richard Hatch from Battlestar Galactica. When you play a role-playing game, do you like to have your own dice? GMDice.com is one of the best selections of dice on the internet. From stone dice to metal dice and even bone dice, GMDice.com is your dice store.
Well, now it's time to hear from a listener like you. Tell me, Mitchell Dalton, from the fantastic forums over at VorpalNetwork.com, what does D&D mean to you?
Hello, Tome Show. This is Mitchell Dalton from the forums. What does D&D mean to me? To me, it means getting with some friends, having fun while beating down some evil monsters. I hope that works.
and Gabe Gregoire, senior novel contributor of the Tome Show.
Hello, this is Gabe Gregoire, sometime Tome Show correspondent and lifelong Dungeons & Dragons player. I'm excited about the 100th episode, and I'd like to contribute by talking about my history with the game and what it means to me. My first D&D set was the Red Basic book, edited by Tom Moldvay, with the cover by Errol Otis. My mother, who knew I had a penchant for fantasy, gave it to me for my birthday. Little did she know, the gift would set me on a decades-long course of gaming and adventure. Anyway, I had a best friend who lived in another state who would visit during the summer. This particular summer, I want to say 1981, was no exception. It wasn't long before I showed him my books and dice, and he volunteered to Dungeon Master our first game. I made a character called Silverleaf, whose name I stole from the sample game printed in the back of the basic book. Like his namesake, Silverleaf was an elf, and back then every elf character was a fighter magic user, and I was fine with that. The game progressed. After a few preliminary encounters, Silverleaf met up with the red dragon that proceeded to toast him with its fiery breath unto death. I was forlorn. I never suspected that my friend had such a cruel streak in him. In dismay, I tore up the character sheet, put the pieces in a paper lunch bag, burned the bag, and buried the ashes in the backyard, with ceremony. In a way, every character I've played since has been in the interest of regaining the glory of Silverleaf. Of course, my friend never told me about the spells of resurrection and raised dead. By the time I was savvy enough to know about those, it was too late. He did, however, tell me about the Advanced D&D Player's Handbook and Dungeon Master's Guide, and those books immediately topped my wish list for Christmas. Today I game with a group of 40-somethings here in Virginia Beach, and we use mostly the 3.5 rules, although we occasionally branch out into 4E. I'm still trying to recapture the glory days. In the process, we make a little history of our own. That's the beauty of role-playing. The story never dies. My childhood best friend and I have since parted ways. He lives on a commune in Louisa, Virginia, and I only hear from him secondhand. But I'll never forget that game we played. Silverleaf lives on in my memory, untoasted and pristine, idealized like childhood itself. I guess playing D&D is a way to remind ourselves that we're still kids at heart. Well, here's to being kids, and here's to the best game ever invented. Thank you.
And the lovely, if not sometimes silly, folks over at Core New Media wanted to chime in as well.
This is Walt Snyder from Core New Media, and I'm here with two great guys, Benjamin Adams and Joel Komen. Joel is Thacko on the Vorpal forums, who you can find on, lots of our RPG episodes at corerpg.com. And Jeff wanted a bunch of people to tell him what D&D was to them. So, Joel, you want to start off maybe?
Yeah, sure. D&D for me now is really about a lot about staying connected with my childhood and making sure that as I get older, I still use my imagination. Fantasy has been something that I've always loved. It's been near and dear to my heart. It's a genre that entertains me, and D&D is a great way for me to express that, and it's a great way for me to express that with my friends. And it also holds a lot of memories from when I was young, growing up. It was an escape. Mm-hmm. Grew up in a small town in a quiet rural area in the Bible Belt of our country, and back in the day when
where D&D is illegal, really,
yeah, you know, you when you did actually get the accusations
vilified,
of
yeah.
Devil worship and mm-hmm. occultism, and I remember those times. Mm-hmm. But we persevered through that kind of thing, and we had just a blast. It's memories of getting together with four or five, six friends and staying up all night long, Cheetos and Mountain Dew.
Yeah, that was that was Jolt Cola days, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Jolt. Oh, no, good actually, Lord.
No, no, no. This is, I'm afraid I go back a little further than that.
I'm sorry. Did I call you out? Oops.
We're talking circa 1979, 1980 here.
Yeah, that's for, when for I was me. Born. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that would be when you were born and I was playing. And but that's what it's about, you know. I just the game was it was a great way to stretch your imagination. You know, at that time we didn't even have the Atari 2400. Is that it? 2600 at that time. Pong was about the only thing that at that time you could get in the house.
Oh, good Lord!
And I'm sure it was quite expensive for its day too.
And it was quite yes it was. So you know it was D&D another way was to keep cheap ourselves and busy.
It exercised the best muscle you could. Well, some would say muscle, but.
Well, it beat the hell out of reading, you know. I mean, you know, here, you know, I'm on probably my second or third reading of the Tolkien trilogy, and all of a sudden I get to kind of act it out, you know.
Yeah.
So that's what it had a lot to do with, and that's carried over into my adult life. And although, you know, in my adult life, it's been hit or miss, more hit here in the last several years than miss, I love it. It's just it's a great time to get together with my friends. I've been able to pass it on to my son, and he's an enthusiastic player, and hopefully he'll pass it on to his children.
Awesome.
Who knows? I might be playing it with my grandchildren someday.
That would be just an amazing way to connect and you know keep your family together as it, you know, because D&D to branch into my experience, D&D is an amazing social experience, and you meet all sorts of people that you might not have sat with before. You know, jocks to computer nerds to librarians for all we know, and. If you could actually sit with family and you know tell stories over a sheets of graph paper and plastic dice, you know, that would be something, and taking that, doing that with your grandkids and so on, I think that would be a really interesting idea, Joel.
It is. I've been able to actually share it with my brother and his son and over the past year, and that's been fantastic. We were like, you know, why didn't we do this sooner?
That's really cool. My own son plays D&D as well, and it's a lot of fun because it helps me challenge him, and it helps me teach him math in the process, keeping track of his hit points and his two hit rolls and savings throws. It really challenges his mind and the tactical stuff when you get into combat, and it also teaches him different social experiences dealing with other people in fantasy situations that he can learn from and apply to the real world if he encounters a similar situation. So it's really great on those levels, I feel. Social.
Absolutely. And the creative side, too, that you touched on, the idea of entering into character development and really thinking about, you know, what makes a person tick. The way we do things, you know, we'll sit down before we do, everybody's going to write a backstory. And that opened up a whole new area for my son to explore, and he took it a step forward, you know, further, and he was backstories plus, and I would write along with him. I like to write a little bit in my spare time, and we do it together, and so it helped him to explore that side of himself as well, to see exactly what he could do. And I think he was, you know, ultimately he was surprised, as were we, you know, as to what he could do. So it's always great when you can exercise their mind. I don't want to put down people who play console games. I understand why they do, but man, I gotta tell you, this beats the hell out of WoW.
Well, it does, because one of the reasons why, I think, is, you know, WoW has predefined shapes and predefined imagery. And with D&D, you just take somebody's verbal description of something, and then you form in your mind what is the best possible appearance for that thing, which makes you enjoy it all the more. And you can have four people around a table plus a DM, and everyone can have their own most perfect vision of that object, creature, city. And it's the most exciting thing to them. But if it was predefined like it is in WoW, you know, there might be some appealing parts. But on the whole, it's a lot better because you use the most important, the most powerful computer on the planet, which is the one that sits atop your shoulders.
That's great insight. Where'd you read that?
I got it from Benjamin Adams.
There you go.
No, not
D&D Freud Weekly. That's a new article coming out. There you go.
There we go.
So, Ben, D&D for you, man.
D&D really means a couple of things to me besides the whole, you know, remembering the good old days of high school and so forth. First of all, D&D means kind of structure almost to a point. In high school, I was kind of a problematic child. I liked to play with fire and so forth and things like that.
Kind of.
Yeah, kind of. You know,
what do you mean you did like to?
Cow pieces here, a barn, cinders there. I'm not going to say where I lived because I don't, you know, I know it's been 7 years, but just in case, I don't want cops coming back.
Corner Media nor the Tome Show endorsed pyrotechnics but the course of childhood.
In all honesty, I moved from L.A. out to the East Coast, kind of in the middle of nowhere. I was a kid who was just busting up stuff, burning stuff, just causing trouble. And I kind of found D&D on by accident, I think it was, more or less, and kind of gave me something to focus on. When I actually saw, oh, there are these ideas and so forth, these concepts, which are you know, pretty much based on your imagination. That's what started it. The other thing is art appreciation to a point as well.
It's a good point.
My mother is very much into art. My uncle actually is an artist. He has a couple pictures up in galleries. Supposedly I have a grandmother, my father's side, who was an artist down here in Miami. She had a studio before she passed away. I don't remember. But whenever I looked at art before, I thought, oh, okay, that looks neat. That looks cool.
Yeah.
Once I started looking at D&D art, and then I wasn't big into reading, but it was more the visual. And once I started to read a little bit of it, then I would kind of conceptualize, well, okay, there's Count Strahd, for example, in Ravenloft. But what's just beyond that door? He's standing on his balcony, but what's beyond there? What else is in there? What other horrors, if you will, are deep within that place? And that's what really got me to start. There's a lot more behind pictures than just the picture itself.
That's a really good insight, too. I like that.
And because honestly, it was always music or pictures for me. I did little reading. I did some reading. But for me, it was those were my influences.
They had the books in juvie.
Well, no. We actually had to peer through the glass at the neighboring school. That's how I was able to see him. But
I'm sorry, Walt. Go ahead.
That was awesome.
But I won't tell you what a beholder means in juvie. But anyways,
man,
the other thing really is D&D is
we're gonna need a disclaimer for this 10-minute bit. You understand that?
D&D was kind of my starting to my career. I mean, I'm majoring in history. Really, I'm interested in, you know, the ancient world, ancient warfare, things like that. And D&D really started it. You know, it was kind of the discussion of, you know, basic Dungeons and Dragons, and then kind of my thoughts of, well, where does this come from? It was kind of based off the Crusades, and from there it really flourished into, you know, my major and what I kind of hope to be eventually a career. So D&D, granted, you know, has a lot of stuff, but it's also a starter for me at something completely different from gaming or anything along those lines.
You know, I guess a slight addendum. D&D kind of kept me out of gangs, you know, the standard street gangs. I mean, mm-hmm. I was more interested in reading more about the olden days, if you will, rather than running around with guys shooting people and doing lines when I lived and grew up in Miami. So, you know, it gave you your career, and it basically very well could have given me my life in the mm-hmm. process. So D&D is, you know, many things to many people, but for us, it definitely is deep-seated into all of our personalities, and it seems to have helped make all of us who we are. So I think that's really awesome, and I think it's a great gift that Arneson and Gygax gave us so many years ago.
That and also D&D, we have to admit, is also half-naked elven chicks in chainmail bikinis. You know, let's be honest here and throw it out on the table, you know.
Giggity, wow. Giggity. I want to play with you guys then.
All right.
If all right, nothing guys. Else, at the very least, it helped me keep my sanity in a insane world where I live.
End times.
Yes.
Awesome. So if any of this appeals to you, we do a series of shows, and forgive the shameless plug here. We do a series of shows. You can check us out at corenewmedia.com. Up at the top right of the page, you'll see links for subscribing via iTunes or standard RSS. We have arguably one of the most popular D&D gameplay shows, where Benjamin Adams is there as often as he can be. Joel Coleman is there, again, as often as he can be. And both of them are great guys. Corny Media would not be what it is without them. And we're always looking for new friends and new hosts. So if you're interested, you want to pick up a mic and experiment, give us a shout. CornyMedia.com. Spell core with a K. Guys, thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you, Walt.
And now the award-winning podcaster, Paul Tevis, comes down off of his throne in the sky, where he records Have Games, Will Travel, and more, and wants to clue you in on why D&D is the mother of all gay games. Hey, Paul, how are you?
Hi, Jeff. It's Paul Tevis from Have Games, Will Travel for a few games more. I want to congratulate you on reaching 100 episodes. That's a tremendous accomplishment for any podcast. And I wanted to take a moment to talk a little bit about sort of my history with D&D and one moment in particular that's really stuck with me. You know, I, as a podcaster, am really known for playing a lot of indie games, story games, dirty hippie games, whatever it is you want to call them. But D&D has actually always really been sort of a central part of my gaming life. You know, D&D was my first gaming experience. I was a Redbox kid, and I remember playing first edition D&D with my friend Stuart Zimmerman's father, and a friend of his, and the five of us sort of sitting around the table in their kitchen when I was in, I think I must have been in elementary school at the time, and just having a great time with that and really dabbling a bit in second edition, but not really playing, reading a lot of books. But then it was really when third edition came out in 2000 that I really got back into the gaming hobby. I mean, I hadn't done any role playing when I was in college, and really not any in high school either. And I was working for a software company. I just started work there, and I was surrounded by geeks. And there was some gaming that was going on. We said, "Oh, this third edition thing's coming out. Let's get a group together." And so I actually started running a group. And I remember very early on, I was running the group through the Sunless Citadel, which is the first adventure in the sort of adventure path for third edition. And one of the guys, Chris, was playing an elven sorcerer. And we had what we referred to as the elven archer corps. We had an elven sorcerer and an elven druid who would always stand in the back with their bows and shoot at things. And there's one point, they're down sort of in the bowels of the citadel, and they get attacked by something. And Chris sort of looks at the map, and he realizes, well, he says, "I can't really fire the bow because I'm shooting into combat, and there's a guy over here, so I guess I draw my sword and attack." And there's this pause, and I just looked over him and I said, "You have a sword?" He had never used a sword before. No one had any idea that he had anything other than a bow. He says, "Yeah, it's right on my character sheet." And I looked down, and sure enough, there written on his character sheet is longsword. So play went on. Well, as it turns out, "You have a sword" became a sort of catchphrase for that group. And has now transferred to the group that I'm currently playing with, that I'm playing 4th edition with and that I'm playing other games with, none of whom were ever in that game. I'm the only person who has continuity between those. But the "you have a sword" sort of meme continues to spread through the group. So, you know, D&D has always had a special place in my heart, and I'm glad to see that that a podcast devoted to D&D has made it 200 episodes. And I'm glad to see that a podcast about D&D has done so well. So congratulations, and I look forward to hearing more from you in the future. So take care.
John Four of the Roleplaying Tips blog is going to tell you some more about the addiction of D&D that started with the Red Box, like Paul had talked about. Man, you guys must be old. That box came out when I was a toddler, at best.
Hi, my name is John Four. I publish roleplayingtips.com on the Roleplaying Tips Weekly Easy, and also the new Campaign Mastery blog. Jeff had emailed me a little while ago asking what D&D has meant to me. As part of his 100th episode celebration. Congratulations, Jeff. That's an excellent milestone to achieve. A lot of hard work. I've put together some notes on what D&D has meant to me. It started in 1980 when a friend got the Red Box for Christmas, and he promptly opened the box and handed the books to me to be the GM. Within the week, we were playing, I think, every day, and I've been playing ever since, mostly as Dungeon Master, 99% of the time. So I grew up with D&D. I made a lot of friends over the years, specifically through role-playing games, people that I might not have met otherwise. And it's always been an ongoing source of new friendships and lasting friendships as players join my games, and also away from the game table, constantly meeting new people through blogs, forums, email, and Facebook. It's given me a stable group of friends over the years. It also supplies me and has supplied me with a huge dose of creativity and imagination. It got me into professional writing. I produced my e-zine because of my avid D&D playing and interest in improving my game master skills. I've written books and been in professional publications, all spawned because of my passion for playing role-playing games. All those adventures, the world building, the homebrew worlds, all the adventure notes and NPC write-ups I've done over the years have all contributed to writing ability and my interest in writing for fun, which has also benefited me in my jobs over the years. During middle and high school, D&D provided huge inspiration to read fiction and nonfiction books. I think the first edition Dungeon Master's Guide was the first nonfiction book that I read that wasn't a school assignment. And my appetite for reading fiction and nonfiction continues to this day because of all the excellent information introduced to me through D&D and all the books that it involves. D&D has spawned my Roleplaying Tips newsletter, as previously mentioned, and that has served as a huge incentive to learn about web programming, webmastering, online marketing, blogging, and online business knowledge. D&D has also spawned side hobbies such as wargaming, miniatures and painting, computer RPGs. I remember spending many, many hours in Ultima 4 and Bard's Tale, first two computer RPGs that I played, unless you count Temple of Apshai on the Commodore 64. Fortunately, at that time, because I was DMing every day at lunch and after school and on the weekends with friends, I had lots of time weeknights to play computer games. D&D has also provided me many business skills, believe it or not. Being a dungeon master, a good dungeon master, involves a lot of skill development. You have to be a good master of ceremonies, a gracious host. You have to be good at organizing events and organizing the herd of cats, that is your player group, to attend on the correct night at the correct location at the correct time. Dungeon mastering also gives you experience handling conflicts and facilitation. Of course, D&D is all about imagination and design. D&D has also given me many excuses to create documentation, which has flexed those and built those skills over the years. Reading and understanding rules and requirements, documenting your thoughts, creating notes that will be used at a future date to guide some process. So creating notes for your dungeon mastering that you probably won't reference for weeks or months afterwards. Dungeon mastering is also an excellent exercise at thinking on your feet, and it's pretty good at developing communication skills. So this and more has definitely contributed to my skills that I've provided to employers over the years. D&D throughout my life has served as a foundation. The regular game nights, meeting new people, not losing the value of play, especially when entering adulthood, staying imaginative, all of these on an ongoing basis has served as an excellent foundation for personal development and being interested and curious about all kinds of things. So those are my thoughts, Jeff. I hope you see another 100 episodes. Congratulations again.
And of course, the Tome couldn't do a big episode like this without the losers over at Gamers Haven sticking their nose into my business. Stupid guys want to be me so bad, they're even my partners over at the Vorpal Network.
Hey, this is Ethan from the Gamers Haven podcast. I'm here with Nathan and Jeremy, and we're here to celebrate the 100th episode of the Tome with a bit on how much D&D means to us and what it means to us, and maybe some stories about what D&D is and, you know, some stories about D&D from our past and whatnot. Jeremy, since you beat me by 1 year in the amount of time that we've played, what does D&D mean to you?
It means a lot of things. It means, you know, friends getting together, escaping from the real world for a little while, just playing a fun game that's advanced and changed as the years have gone by. All the way back to TSR and their horrible business plan, it seemed like. But fun settings.
I don't really know if I'd say fun. It was TSR's bad business plan, but
this is my story. Right, back to my story.
Bad business plan.
Either way, all the way back to TSR with all their different settings and how it advanced to, you know, options and powers to up all the way to 4th edition. It's just a fun game. It's one of those basic games that you can really say D&D, and anyone who's not a religious nut knows what D&D is, and it's like, oh, you know, they may have played it in college. They may know somebody that plays it. It really is one of those games that has kind of made gaming maybe not mainstream, but at least out there a little bit more. It means late nights at the table, you know, with friends, just wonderful characters and just a lot of fun. It's the fun. So it means a lot of different things, but mostly just fun.
Nathan, what does D&D mean to you?
Let's see. Use of imagination, fantastical environments, and daring adventures with sword fighting and magic mayhem and monsters extravaganza. Basically, what it does is it allows me to recapture some of that magic of when I was a kid, and imagination was such a major important part of your life when, you know, you went out with your friends and you know, fought with sticks, and you were you know super knights and stuff defending the castle from the evil dreaded such and such. You know, it allows you to go back and relive some of that without, you know, all the scars and bruises and stuff that usually mm-hmm. resulted from getting whacked in the face with a stick. You know, it allows you to exercise parts of your brain that, because of the weight of society dragging down on you, you don't get to exercise as much as you used to. I mean, I don't get to read like I used to read anymore. You know, I used to digest like 5 books a week. Now I don't get to do that anymore. I've got too much other stuff I have to do. So, you know, it allows me to use my imagination to have a good time, get together with my friends who are of the same like and mind, who enjoy doing the same thing, and just sit back and relax and have a stress-free evening, mostly. And you know, enjoy something that's a bit on the fantastical side without a care about it being on the fantastical side.
Yeah. Well, I guess what D&D means to me is really camaraderie and friendship. I didn't play D&D when I was a kid, but I did play it more when 3rd Ed came out, and I can say I have a lot of fond memories, both gaming moments and moments with friends, because of D&D. I met people through D&D. I have a richer life, I think, because of it. And there are a lot of things out there that I think D&D has colored my viewpoints on. And I think D&D is a great time waster. When you're a kid, if you don't have an outlet for your creative tendencies, or if you don't have an outlet that you can go, you know, be with your friends and you know, escape into this other world and still know, you know, that it's an imaginary world, that D&D is just a good representation of that child within us that really likes, you know, playing cops and robbers, or likes, you know, chasing stuff around with said stick and just, you know, having a good time and just, you know, sit back and exercise that brain of yours. That's D&D to me. I think D&D is just a great exercise to the mind.
Aw, we're all sharing a moment.
Now let's share a gamer story. I know my favorite moment from D&D, for me anyway, and you two weren't involved in this.
No, we weren't.
Lycanthropic kobolds. I mean, come on, third edition had come out. I had some 10th level players. Their characters were also 10th level, but, you know, that's beside the point. They were sent into a mountain by a wizard saying, hey, go get me White Dragon's Egg. I need it for this spell component. You know, it's your typical, I am wizard, hear me roar, go do this. And the players go, yes, sir, Mr. Wizard, or don't turn me into a toad. They go off to this place, you know. And, you know, they're 10th level. They've been playing since first level. So, I mean, they know the edition at this point. This is third edition. You know, things are not always what they seem. They go into the cave. First thing they see are three kobolds sitting around a campfire. And I hear the best words someone says is, they're only kobolds, and they go charging in. And so half the party goes charging in to fight these kobolds, and I'm going, okay, you guys know you're 10th level. I'm not going to put, you know, piddly little kobolds in here just for show. Well, they start bonking on the kobolds. Well, some other players are standing back going, I'm just going to watch because this is going to be funny. They start bonking on the kobolds, and then the kobolds all wolf out. And then the kobolds proceed to bite them all before they are thusly slain by various rangers, barbarian, and druid powers. did I mention that they all failed their fortitude saves? Yeah. So after the adventure, after they get through the whole dungeon, they go back to the wizard. I tell them, okay, the wizard heals your wounds. You see, these three players assumed, mind you, that this meant that the wizard also healed any lycanthropic issues. But you see, the wizard didn't know there were lycanthropic kobolds inside them caves. And the players / characters did not mention them at all. So the next thing they did after doing this is they got on a boat to go over to another continent. Yeah, that was entertaining. So after that shipwreck, yeah, that was fun. That's my favorite D&D story, really. Yeah. What do you guys got?
That one's impossible to top. Jeremy, you got something you want to go with? The one I was thinking of was the first one I played with you, where I joined in and then everybody died because of the stupid death runes. Ooh, the rune flares up. Okay. Do you have more than 80 hit points? No, I've got like 20. You're dead. Hand me your character sheet.
The players were traveling in hell, and they came upon this demonic wizard's tower. And they were able to get inside, and they got all the way to the top with only one casualty. And they get to the bane room, and one of them reads this rune on the door. So they walk in, and yeah, the party,
we go in
all
fine.
Dies. Yeah, they go inside. Well,
we all went in fine. It was when we tried to leave.
Yeah, it turned out that the runes were on the outside, so walking into the room was fine. Leaving the room meant your death. And so the whole party was killed except for one person who had knew nothing about magic, and he's just standing there going, I am so...
That was Sam, too.
Yeah.
And he's just sitting there in the room going... I can't leave.
He couldn't leave because he saw his friends.
Reverted to cannibalism?
I don't remember how it ended. All I know is that they walked in fine. They were trying to get this magical orb, and they walked out, and, well...
We died.
That's...
Horribly.
Sometimes demonic mages do that type of thing.
Yes, sometimes mages are...
Bastards.
Like that.
It was funny. I look back at it now and laugh. At the time, we're all like, oh my god! died, because we pretty much, at that point, after that happened, Jeremy started a completely new campaign, because nobody survived except for that one character, and he wasn't moving.
That didn't work out how I expected it to.
Oh, no, it happened.
Next campaign.
I think it worked out exactly the way Jeremy
One of the stories I remember, my players end up in hell a lot, but they're riding down the road. This was way back when. This was second edition. Riding down the road, and they're in this creepy forest, and they had been hunting rabbits, and that was unfortunate, because you'd shoot a rabbit with an arrow and it would just sit there and laugh at you. So you would sit there and keep shooting arrows at it, and finally they decided, we'll see, hardtack. But
yeah,
what made it worse was one of the players was actually a demon, and he just didn't ask questions. And so they're heading down this deep, dark woods, and there's a perfectly straight, road and such. And they're all riding horses. And out in front of them is this little gnome, and he's standing there. And they're like, what is this gnome doing? And suddenly the gnome is gone. And they're like, okay, oh, this God. Is getting kind of creepy. And then out of the blue, one of the horse's heads is missing. And there's just blood spraying all over one of the female characters. And they're screaming. And then suddenly the gnome standing at the end of the road with a horse's head.
Chewing on it.
And they're like, what the hell is going on? So the demon player stepped forward and pulled out his whatever weapon he had. And the little gnome just tossed aside the horse head and made him go blind. So he's running around blind, and the gnome's gone again, and the one character's screaming, and they're trying to get through, and suddenly, zip, another horse's head gets ripped off. And everybody's screaming, then one of them runs into the woods, which was bad, because, well, they're in hell. And it ended up the party running away from this gnome who's chucking horse heads at him and just screaming.
All four of the horses that we had ripped their heads off.
I'm sorry, I missed this.
Just those great types of scenes in a game where
oh God, it was great.
It's stuff like that make D&D fully worth the time and effort.
Just great NPCs and great stories and all sorts of things. So, congratulations on the 100th show.
Yes, yeah. Congrats, Jeff.
And Dr. Hurd of the Icosahedrophilia blog. Really, could you have a more difficult name to say? And podcast is about to lay some knowledge on you as to why D&D is awesome to him.
Hello, this is Chris Hurd of the Icosahedrophilia podcast, which you can download or subscribe to at d20.herdworld.com. That's d20.herdworld.com. I've been playing Dungeons & Dragons since about 1977 or 78, and to me, D&D has always been about two things, friendship and imagination. Sometimes the friendship came first, and D&D games came later. In other settings, D&D helped me make friends with people that would otherwise be outside my rather limited social circles. Through it all, friends old and new helped me imagine heroic characters and far-out fantasy worlds. I let D&D go by the wayside around 1986 and came back to the game in 2003 with the advent of Edition 3.5. In 2008, my group upgraded to 4th edition, and now we're 7 months into a new campaign. These days, D&D is still mostly about friendship and imagination, but to some extent also about nostalgia. Every time I sit down to play D&D, it's a new and fresh experience, but one that's also filled with good memories from 30 years of campaigns gone by.
And lastly, I forced McCoy from the basics of the game, and whom I kill a lot in my regular 4th edition game, to record his story about what D&D means to him, and he came through in spades. So I think I'll spare his life for a little bit longer, in at least the next adventure.
Hi, I'm Jeremiah McCoy of the Basics of the Game. Jeff asked us to contribute our thoughts as to what D&D was to us. What's D&D to me? It's the game. The game. I mean, Sure, I play lots of games. I review lots of games. I love my role-playing games. I love trying new games, and that's fine. But to use the baseball metaphor, D&D is the Nolan Ryan. It's the old reliable. It's the one we all know about, love, since day one. It's the champ, and it always will be. Now, is it cool? No, no. It's not cool. It is not apt to put you into the higher society. It's not going to actually make you all that smarter, although learning math skills early on, probably a good thing. It's not going to get you the date to the prom. It's not going to make your life easier. Hell, sometimes it makes it harder. But is it worth my time? Even after all these years? Yeah. It's poker night. It's my poker night, or the night of the game where you go hang out with the guys. Well, this is how I hang out with the guys. I don't go to bars. I play games. I socialize and talk to my pals and make stories. Because, really, that's what it's about to me. Making the story. I mean, sure, it's nice to roll the d20, but that's not what makes it cool. What makes it cool is when I hit that 20 and I tell the story of how that one crit put down the bad guy so I could go save my buddy and go leaping off the balcony and swing from a rope and land on the ship and tell the crew to head on. I can do that with my pals, and we make up the story as we go along, and the game master's, you know, bouncing things back and forth, and that's D&D to me. That is why I play. That's why it's still relevant, even in this age of computer games that are more and more advanced, with lots of pretty graphics and neat stories. At the end of the day, you can't make up the story. You're playing the story they make for you. They give you the paths. It's a choose-your-own-adventure, sure. But it's not you making up the story. D&D is you with your pals making up a story around the table. The dice, the character sheets, they're there to help you do that. They're the accoutrements, the ritual, to help you enjoy making those stories. Anyways, that's D&D to me.
And that, my friends, is the 100th episode of The Tome. Feel free to send your appreciation to thetomeshow@gmail.com. Express it as a comment on the blog at thetomeshow.com, or on the forums at thevorpalnetwork.com, or even on iTunes with another glowing review of the show. Or even better, tell someone about the show and how this episode has re-energized you for the game. Or you can call in the voicemail line like Mitchell Dalton did from the forums by calling 206-202-4553. If you don't use the number, it will disappear, and I really do enjoy hearing from you. And of course, if you want to express your appreciation with financial support, go buy a book. Maybe two. Swing by the Tome's Amazon store, which you can also find at thetomeshow.com. You can, again, find links to all the podcasts and blogs mentioned in this episode at thetomeshow.com, as well as links to rpgpodcast.com and rpgbloggers.com, two fantastic sources for finding all of your gaming new media needs. I've been a member of both for some time now, and they are a fantastic community that I would never want to leave behind. Thank you all for everything you've done to make The Tome Show possible. This has been the episode 100, a D&D celebration of
The Tome.
I'm on the wall.